Hey everybody, it's Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for listening to this message from Heritage Church of Christ. We would be thrilled to share more content like this with you and make it easy for you to share it with others. You can find more messages like this on our podcast, or you can download our smartphone app by searching for Heritage Church of Christ in your app store. But most importantly, I hope this message encourages you to take a next step toward a thriving relationship with Jesus. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Brock Polk, and I am wanting you to know that our church family is enthusiastic about helping people take next steps with Jesus. And so we're thrilled that you might have the chance to be on that journey with us. Speaking of next steps with Jesus, I am celebrating today. There's a whole row of my Pierce and Maloney family friends back here who are gathered because today, one of our middle school students, Autumn, has decided today's the day that she is going to commit her life to Jesus. And so right after this service, yeah, that's right, we can give Autumn our encouragement. So right after this service is over, they're going to make their way out to the baptistry in the lobby out there, and in just a few minutes after the service is dismissed, I'd love for as many of you as possible to gather around and celebrate this special moment for that family with us. You know, we have had one of the most eventful weeks in our community in recent memory over the past 7 days. I know time flies, but there's been a lot of really big things that have happened. It seems almost like, further away to me at this point, but it was just 6 days ago that we had the solar eclipse, this moment when our community was in this path of totality and all these people, traveled in from distant places to come and see it in our area. And, we all went outside with the funny glasses and did the thing that your teachers always told you not to do. We looked right at the sun, and it was just amazing to think about how small we are and how big everything out there is, and in the grand scheme of things, just kind of that perspective of the universe. And just when it seemed like there couldn't be anything bigger than a solar eclipse to happen to our community, HEB opened, and so another huge event in the life of our community. Somehow it seems to have affected almost as many people around here, and I haven't even been in the store yet. I keep driving by and seeing there's no room for another truck in the parking lot, so I'm just going to have to wait until all of the initial excitement wears out. And then, as if those big events weren't enough for 1 week in our community, this is also a NASCAR weekend up at Texas Motor Speedway, just a couple of miles up the highway. And so there's all sorts of visitors in town and RVs all over the interstate, and there's unusual aircraft taking off and shows and demonstrations that are going on, and lots of folks, including some people from our church, I'm sure, who are up at the Speedway, who are camping out and enjoying all the festivities that are going on there all weekend long. In the years that I've lived in Fort Worth, I've been to two races at the Motor Speedway, two times that friends have given me tickets to go to a race. Once it was to one of the open wheel, the IndyCar style cars, and then the second time to one of the truck races. And both times that I went with groups of people who were new to the experience, including myself. I don't know just a ton about motor racing like that, and so we were all kind of rookies to this thing. And so we showed up, just eager to see what all the fuss was about, and we went and we, got concession stuff and went and sat down in our assigned seats, and we sat in this long row, and we're, getting excited until we hear the words, "Gentlemen, start your engines," and then that was as if that was the last opportunity we had to talk to one another. Those of you who have been to a race there know what I'm talking about when I say it's hard to communicate with your friends, hard to communicate with the other people on your row after those cars have already been started, because it is incredibly noisy in that environment. I mean, you can hardly believe how loud those race cars and race trucks really are. They are so loud that everybody in the place needs significant hearing protection, and it makes it really, really difficult to carry on any kind of ongoing conversation. In fact, my memory is that during those two races, for the very first couple of laps, we tried to yell at one another to communicate, but it just wasn't working. In fact, it was comical how pitifully we were communicating with one another. And so in the end, we all just kind of sat there with 100,000 of our closest friends just facing forward, not talking at all, And we're staring at the race because it's too difficult to communicate. Now, I know that there are some electronic, you know, options that are available to communicate with your friends, but we didn't have those. And of course, a racetrack is not the only place or the only situation where your surroundings can get so deafeningly loud that it becomes hard to concentrate. I mean, this could happen to you in a lot of places, concerts or job sites or school cafeterias or whatever. But when you're in a loud environment like that, sometimes it seems like the only way to successfully communicate is to just try to get louder, right? I mean, it's like you're surrounded by noise, but you need to be heard. And so the only option that seems obvious is to try to be louder than the noise. And that becomes a problem that compounds on itself. You know, you got a whole bunch of people trying to be louder than louder than louder than louder. Now, there's been a few times I've volunteered at my kids' school during, you know, elementary school during a school day. And that always includes a tour of duty in the lunchroom. You know, you got to go be a monitor in there. And the lunchroom always ends up being one of those noisy places. And it's not because the kids are being unruly. It's just because there's 200 conversations going on at the same time in an enclosed space, and everybody's trying to be heard. And in a moment like that, in a situation like that, nobody seems to be able to hear what they need to hear because the environment is simply too loud. There's too many distractions, too many obstacles in the way to really being able to communicate. And distractions and obstacles to paying attention is what we're talking about together today. Last week, we kicked off a series of messages through the book of Hebrews, which is in the New Testament portion of your Bible. And Hebrews is really an ancient sermon that was preserved by the earliest Christians so that they could pass it down to be a benefit to the generations that came after them. And Hebrews is this extended sermon. Like, it's actually longer than one of mine. Hard to believe, right? I know. But it covers a lot of theological ground. It's got some really complex topics that it's trying to address. But one of the most basic arguments that Hebrews is making is that God is communicating with us. One of the most simple, I think I have a slide for this, one of the most basic arguments that Hebrews is trying to make is that God is engaging, interfacing with humanity, and in fact, God has been doing this for a long time. And if you think about it, that's really kind of a profound thing to say. It's a profound idea in light of all of the different ways that human beings have historically thought about religion. Because in the scope of human history, people have come up with all sorts of explanations and stories and myths and legends about the causes of the different powerful things that happen in the world around us. I mean, humans have created stories to explain frightening forces that they see in nature, weather events, volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, all of that kind of stuff. Civilizations all over the world have adopted theories about the otherworldly drama and the decisions that are influencing life on earth. Think back to everything you ever heard or read or studied or watched about Greek mythology or about tribal religions all over the world, and there's usually a pattern where humans are speculating, imagining how and why the gods are inflicting various conditions on humanity. Why is there a drought? Why is there a plague? Why is there all of these different problems that are going on? And then as the religion gets established, the humans try to figure out, how are we going to appease the gods to make the bad stuff stop and the good stuff keep going? How are we going to sacrifice enough or worship enough so that the negative conditions will change for us? And there's this assumption among so many of those religious explanations, there's this assumption that the gods must kind of feel indifferent or disinterested or a little bit annoyed by or aggressive towards humans. And so the humans have to work to try to get on the God's good side, to try to get the God's attention, to try to curry the God's favor. But Christianity makes a different claim. Christianity is claiming a different story. Christianity makes a claim about the spiritual world that's altogether different from those other faiths and philosophies. Christianity says that in the spiritual realm beyond what we can see, there is a God over everything who actually cares. A God who is actually sympathetic. A God who is actually interested in what you and I are experiencing, interested in the well-being of humanity. This is not a God that's disinterested. This is not a God that's indifferent. This is not a God that's annoyed. This is not a God that's just overly angry. This is a God who is interested and connected to our story. In fact, Christianity is founded on the idea that God not only notices humans, but that God seeks out connection with humans, that God wants relationship with humans. And this is how the book of Hebrews begins. If you got your Bible, I'd be thrilled for you to open it up. You can use the app on your phone. I'm going to put these verses up here on the screen. But at the very beginning of the book of Hebrews, of this sermon, you find this statement that kicks off the whole thing. The preacher says, "In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways." Now, we're going to continue that in just a minute, but I'm going to ask you to stop right there. I want to remind you that this sermon was written for, it was delivered for an audience who had a Jewish faith background. And so the preacher is referencing all of the stories in the Old Testament portion of our Bible, the stories from the history of Israel, where God communicated with the people. The preacher says, God spoke to the ones who came before us, the ancestors who came before us, through prophets. Now, a prophet is not necessarily someone who predicts the future. It's somebody who speaks on God's behalf. And so the preacher says, God has been speaking for generations to humanity. God has been reaching out through the prophets at many times and in various ways. So we're talking about the stories of people like Abraham and Sarah and Jacob and Moses and Joshua and Elijah and Samuel and Isaiah and Jeremiah. And the preacher here is trying to point out this theme that's been developing through history, that God has been reaching out to humans. And this is big news. This is exciting news because it says something about the heart of God. What is it? What it says is God is an initiator. God is not just sitting back waiting on the humans to figure it out and unlock the right code or the right system of communications to be able to get God's attention. This message says God is starting the conversation, which is vastly different from what so many other stories about the supernatural realm have told us. Hebrews says God has been reaching down to us. And if you study the Old Testament, what you find is that every time God reaches out, every time God reaches down, every time God starts a conversation, it's a conversation about a relationship. It's a conversation about wanting to be connected to us. And there are hundreds of Old Testament passages that I could point you to demonstrate what I'm talking about. I chose just one for us in Exodus chapter 6. And this is a moment when the people of Israel are enslaved in Egypt, and God says to them, speaks to them through the prophet Moses and says, "I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment." Which is to say, God is saying, "I see what you're going through. I care about your struggle. I care about your suffering. I'm going to do something about it." And then it goes on in verse 7, and he says, "I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. And then you will know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians." And in these two verses, what God is saying is, I feel compassion. I have an interest. I want to have connection, and I want our connection to be ongoing. I want you to continue to be connected to me. And so verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 1 says, God has been doing this. God has in the past been reaching out time and time again in many times and in various ways, but also God is still reaching out. This is what verse 2 is about. Verse 2 says, God's not done. In fact, God has taken his communication with us to a whole new level. I want you to read verse 2 with me. After reminding us of the various ways that God communicated in the past, in the history, verse 2 says, in these last days, God has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, and through whom also he made the universe. Now this sermon, this Hebrews sermon, is being delivered to people who believe in Jesus. They're already committed to Jesus. And so this is an explanation, a reminder, a recentering on the story that they've already believed, the story they've already bought into. But the preacher of Hebrews also knows that their lives as followers of Jesus have been really difficult. There's been all sorts of challenges, and there's been all sorts of persecution, scary things, tiring things, discouraging things that have happened to them. And so the preacher is saying, this is our story. Our story is that God has been reaching out to us, and God has continued to reach out to us. And then in chapter 1, verse 3, the preacher describes Jesus in one of the most beautiful ways. This is one of those verses you could highlight if you've got your own Bible with you or the app on your phone. Chapter 1, verse 3 says, the Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of God's being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. Now, the significance of this verse is that the Hebrews preacher is telling us that Jesus is a description of what God is like. There's all of those Old Testament passages where God is reaching out and saying, I want to be connected to you. I want you to know who I am. I want you to know my character and what I am like. And in Hebrews, the preacher says, God has shown us an exact replica, an exact demonstration, an exact representation of God's character. Now, in the Greek, it uses a word like that that means something like character. And sometimes you could think of the word character like the personality traits that somebody has. And so it would be very fair to read this and say that Jesus demonstrates the character of God. Jesus demonstrates what God's heart is like. If you want to see how God would respond in a situation, look at how Jesus responded. If you want to know how God cares about suffering or struggling or illness or disease, then look at how Jesus paid attention to those things. If you want to know how God would respond to people who are hateful towards him, look at how Jesus responded to people that were hateful towards him. I mean, that's one way to talk about somebody's character. But you could also use the word character to talk about, like, almost like an alphabet letter. Think about the signet ring that a king would use to sign a letter with their initial on it. It's as if Hebrews is saying Jesus is God's signature. This is a demonstration, an authorization of what God has been trying to communicate to us. And the sermon goes on and says, after Jesus had provided purification for sins, talking about the crucifixion, death, burial, resurrection, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven, and so he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. All right, now that sounds complicated, but I want to simplify that for you really easily, because in the next section, what the author of Hebrews, the preacher, is going to do is quote about a bunch of Old Testament passages that have to do with angels and say, you know, you thought angels were impressive. I mean, every time an angel shows up, they immediately have to say, don't be afraid, because the people they show up to are terrified, okay? Every time. But the author of Hebrews is saying, if you thought angels were impressive, if you thought the message of angels was something that humans ought to listen to, then guess what? Jesus is even above that. The rest of chapter 1 says Jesus is the one that the angels serve. Jesus is the one that the angels honor and worship. Jesus is the one who tells the angels what to do. This is a description of how things work in the heavenly realms. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, if you thought that we could trust all the things that angels told people in the past, then guess what? You can really trust what Jesus has to say, what Jesus has said, and what Jesus is saying. But the difficulty in trusting what Jesus is saying is that you have to be able to hear it above the noise, right? We live in a noisy culture, don't we? And sometimes the noise is like, you know, the noise that we hear with our ears, and sometimes it's just the drama and the complication of everything that's going on around us. Some of us who wear smartwatches will occasionally, you know, find ourselves in some environment where we get an alert and there's a buzz on our watch and it says, hey, you're in a noisy environment. You're in a place where you either need some hearing protection or you need to get out of there because it's not a good idea. It's not good for your health to stick around in a place like this. We live in an environment that's noisy, but not just with sound. Some of the noise is because of the division and the fighting that happens in our culture. Some of the noise is because of the fears and the anxieties and worries that we carry with us. Some of the noise is because of just the busyness of our schedule and our responsibilities. Some of the noise comes from the things that we use our time for, that we love. But there's all sorts of reasons why our world is a noisy, distracting place. And the reason I bring that up is to set up Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1. This is the verse that I hope you'll take with you from this sermon today. The preacher says, we must pay the most careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard so that we do not drift away. We must pay the most careful attention to what God has been saying, to what God has said, not only through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but we must pay the most careful attention to what God has said to us most recently through God's Son. Because if we don't do that, we could end up drifting away. We could end up losing our mooring. This drifting idea is kind of a nautical metaphor, kind of a, you know, something to do with sailing. It's like if you start to drift away, it means that you get off course. You aren't staying where you thought you were going to stay. You're not staying in the route or the lane that you thought you were going to be in. Drifting away means that you've lost your focus on the destination, or you've lost your ability to move towards the destination. You're losing ground. And the preacher says, we've got to pay careful attention to what God has said through His Son so that we don't drift away in this spiritual journey. And then three more verses we'll read together, beginning in verse 2 of chapter 2. The preacher says, for since the message spoken through angels was binding, and we're talking about all those historical moments where God spoke directly to people in the Old Testament, and it really carried a lot of weight. Those were important messages. The preacher says, since what the angels had to say was important, and since the law, every violation and disobedience received its just punishment, since the law was important, how shall we escape if we ignore so great a salvation? What are we going to do? How are we going to finish the race? How are we going to end up where we're supposed to go if we ignore what God has said through the Son? This salvation, verse 3, part B, this salvation which was first announced by the Lord was confirmed to us by those who heard Him, the people who saw Jesus risen from the dead, the people who carried on the message of His ministry. And God, verse 4, also testified to it by signs and wonders and miracles and gifts of the Holy Spirit distributed according to His will, which is to say, God is affirming the message of Jesus over and over again. Jesus is what God has to say. Jesus is God's message to us. And we ought to pay attention, but it's hard, isn't it? You know, a couple of years ago, I picked up this pair of earbuds that have this feature on them called active noise cancellation. Some of you are familiar with this technology. You've got these headphones that stick into your ears and they have a rubberized tip so they create a good seal that sound doesn't get in all that well. But they also have a microphone on the outside that listens to the environment that you're in. And so if you're on a plane where the engines are right outside the window and it's really noisy, there's this loud hum and all of the announcements and all the commotion that's going on, or if you're in some other loud environment like a coffee shop or whatever, the earbuds are listening to those sounds and generating sound waves that are the exact opposite waves of the ones that you would hear, and playing those for you so that it cancels out some of the distracting noise. It's amazing technology, and I have described everything I know about it to you right there. I don't know anything else about how to explain how it works. But when I'm on a plane or in some noisy environment and I turn on that active noise canceling on my earbuds, it's amazing to me how suddenly the noise goes away. Suddenly, I'm able to pay attention to the phone call that I'm on or to the podcast that I'm listening to or just to the silence. And I turn on that noise cancellation, and instead of just trying to get louder, instead of just cranking up the volume and making things louder than the environment around me, suddenly I'm able to put myself in an environment where I can hear at a comfortable level, where I can pay better attention, where my brain can focus. And the question we've got to ask ourselves here as we begin this journey through Hebrews is, what's it look like in our lives? What's it look like in your schedule? What's it look like in your routine to pay the closest attention, the most careful attention to what Jesus has to say? What's it look like in your schedule to make room so that the noise is not so deafening that you can't hear anything from what God is trying to tell you? Because God's reaching out. God is communicating. God is initiating. God is starting the conversation and has been doing this for generations and continues to do this, continues to affirm the message of Jesus and to reinforce the message of Jesus through the work of the Holy Spirit. God continues to reach out, and the problem we have is that the world is so noisy that it's just hard to hear. How do we pay the most careful attention to Jesus? My son had a track meet this week, and as track parents know, you go and you wait and you wait and you wait until just, you know, the event comes up. So I got to watch a lot of different middle school and high school runners run their races. And as we're standing or sitting there, you know, overlooking the track and the football field in the center, one of the most inspiring things I saw, especially on those long distance races where they have lap after lap after lap, there would be these coaches who would be in the infield, standing on the football field, and they would run over to one sideline, and as their runner came by, they would be yelling inspiring, motivational messages. They would be telling them about how great they were doing and what pace they were running and what status they were and how much just a little bit of burst of energy it would take for them to overtake one more runner ahead of them. And then as that runner went by, the coach would run across the field and go to the other sideline, and when the runner came around the turn, the coach would be waiting there to tell them about how they were doing and to give them more inspiration and more motivation. And you saw these runners getting tired and wearing out, and their energy was drained, but then they would get around that turn over there by their coach, and suddenly you'd see a little spark. You'd see somehow a little bit of increased speed. Somehow they'd pick their head up when they were starting to begin to droop. You noticed that as they paid careful attention to what the coach had to say, they made better progress in the race. And this has got to be our story. This has got to be our strategy. Because as we discussed last week, and as we will discuss through this entire study of Hebrews, the Christian race really is a marathon. It really is an experience that's going to require spiritual stamina and commitment and recommitment and redecision and endurance and perseverance. It really is a race that's going to take all we've got until we reach the finish line. And there's a danger of veering off course. There's a danger of drifting away. But Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1 reminds us that if we will pay the most careful attention to what God is saying, pay the most careful attention to what we have heard in the past and what we have heard in the message of Jesus and what we are hearing through God's Spirit, if we will pay the most careful attention, we can keep making the next step. We can keep moving forward. And so how about you? How are you going to pay the most careful attention to Jesus? I think it starts with figuring out a way to tune out some of the noise. It starts with figuring out a way to cancel out some of the noise so that you can hear what God has been speaking all the time. We got to tune out the noise, and that's a hard thing to do. It's something we got to learn to do together. It's a decision we have to make to prioritize this in our schedule. It's not going to come easily, but it is going to come, and it's going to come in community.